Welcome to Troweling Down Biblical Archaeology for the 21st Century. I'm Gary Byers. This is our local rock star, Dr. Steve Collins. And we're here today in our brand new Veritas International University classroom here in Albuquerque. They've just recently moved in with us. We've been working with them for 5 years or more, and now they're here in town with us. And this is our new space. It was pointed out by our Italian film producer that we should note this is not the official backdrop, but somebody works in here, drew a very nice VIU, Veritas International University emblem behind us. Something more permanent is coming, just not here yet. So we got that. And then we have a screen over here, a TV screen to my left. And we have on there Dr. David Graves, who has David dug with us at Tel El Hammam, which he's going to talk about. Also dug with us at Shiloh with Scott Stripling and me. And he dug one day at Kirbet El Makater, which Steve and I dug back in the 1990s. So we're glad to have our friend David. David was the field area supervisor when we dug the Roman stuff at Tel El Hammam. And so he has been on camera with us for 18 hours. As of right now, we're just finishing the 18th hour for one of our classes, the New Testament class. And so David's going to be on with us. Dr. C is going to ask a few questions, and David will show a few pictures and explain the Roman period at Tel El Hammam. And just so you know, David, it's now David. So we're here in Albuquerque. And David is in Madeira Island off of Portugal, part of Portugal.
Yes. And he's not sitting on the hill just to the east of Tel El Hammam.
He's not in the Dome.
What you see there in the background. Now, if you were, David, that's the view we would get if you were up there, up the hill.
On the Dome Field, yeah.
Tel El Hamas.
Yes. Okay, well, here we are, Dr. C. This has been a fun weekend. And we're just finishing up, so move us on and move us out.
Well, we were going to talk about something else that goes on at Tel El Hammam besides Sodom. By the way, Dr. Graves wrote a real good book, at least one, maybe two on Sodom, didn't you?
I have it, yes, and I have the location of Sodom, and then I deal with it in my book on the archaeology of the Old Testament, so...
Well, that's good. And he actually puts it in the right place.
Yeah.
So we appreciate that a whole lot, David. But it's not just Sodom. And of course, later it became, after about a 600-700 year hiatus, it became a store city, probably during the late time of David or maybe Solomon. And but eventually, there was a Roman bathhouse, I guess we would call it, maybe a Motel 6, eventually became associated with in the Byzantine period, maybe with some kind of a facility for pilgrims, and David was the one that came up with all of this stuff by excavating that location on Tel El Hammam. Now, you're familiar with his work on the city of Livius.
Yes.
Of discovering the city of Livius at and around Tel El Hammam in that general vicinity. But Hammam is named for the bath house.
Yeah.
That's
what Hammam is?
Hammam is the Arabic word for spring. It's also the can be used for toilet
today,
but David focused on that and did a terrific job, and has recently published a preliminary report, which will also become a part of the final volumes eventually when we get those going. So anyway, thank you, Dr. David Graves, for hanging out with us a little bit longer. Now we're torturing him because he's already been talking since this morning and all day and all afternoon. And now it's very late in Madeira where they live. And we don't want to keep him till midnight.
No, we don't.
So let's jump into it. David, you've got some slides, things to familiarize folks with this bathhouse from the Roman period at Tal Hamam.
Okay, great. I'll just share my slides here. And this is an aerial view of the area of the Roman bath complex that we excavated. The very first season we were working together, I crawled underneath the acacia trees in the bottom right corner and picked up a piece of Byzantine pottery and said, "What's this?" And you could just see the corner of it showing underneath the trees, and we wondered exactly what it was. And so I started heading off to doing all my research and went up to Mount Nebo and saw the motto map and found the Roman mile markers and started going home, of course, each season and looking in the libraries for what this place was and who was calling what. And well, it led us to Livius, and I wondered, well, what are they calling this place? So we eventually discovered that it was part of the city of Livius. But this monumental building that the red square is going around is the walls that we traced from that corner. You go from, in archaeology, from the known to the unknown. And we knew where the corner was. We were standing in it. Hammam, of course, there's about five baths all around it, five bath, hot baths. And one of them is right there, just on the corner of this monumental building. Of course, we didn't know it was monumental at the time. But then we found the corner. That was what it looked like, the corner. It's not, it's turned around a little bit. And so we started tracing the walls, and the walls started going up in that direction under these acacia trees. And these acacia trees are thorny. They got big thorns on them, and you have to crawl in underneath there on your hands and knees and tracing the wall, finding out where it goes. It just kept going and going and going. And then we found that corner. And then we found the other side here in the bottom, and it ran down through. The tractors from the farmers had gone in and mixed it up pretty good. So the top level of it was destroyed and pushed up. And so it was pretty gnarly to work through it. But we persevered. We traced the edges, going from the known to the unknown. And then we found the third corner down here. It took us a few days because we just didn't know when it was going to end. But we did the math and we calculated. X marks the spot for the fourth corner. And sure enough, we dug and there was the corner. So we began excavating. And over the seasons, we found these aqueducts producing water, carrying water from the mountain behind us, Tel Habasa. And this is Tel Tahuna here on the left. So we have two aqueducts running to our site, providing water for the big city of Livius. Kerfrine Dam behind us, that was, they hold the water during the rainy season for the locals presently for their agriculture, although they also use the hot springs for their banana plantations. But this is a drawing of it. We have a reservoir on the right side with a question mark because we weren't able to excavate all of that. But we figured that was the reservoir part of it. So we left that and we concentrated, as we say, the known to the unknown. And we began seeing some of the walls sticking out there in the bottom. And so we began excavating that over the different seasons. I think there was about eight seasons in total that we excavated that particular area that I oversaw. There's one of the amphoras that we found. I theorized that the farmers had pushed a lot of the pottery up under the acacia trees on the bottom corner, and that's where we were finding all of these whole pieces, sort of a pottery cache near the surface, and we kept pulling out piece after piece after piece, and we published all of them in our preliminary reports with the drawings and everything, with all the statistics and the all the scientific stuff of where they were found and at what level and so forth. Lane Rittenmeyer, who works with us, he drew this beautiful picture of what it looked like at the time. We provide him all of our drawings and all of our measurements, and then he draws it archaeologically accurate to scale, and this is what it would have looked like. And so you can see there, I think I have another photo of it up close. I have to use my mouse. There's a photograph of it. That's after a couple of seasons, the northwest corner, the bath complex, the bathroom itself is on the bottom left. And that's where the thermal bath is right there. We've got it covered over because it's the next season. We try and preserve as much of it as possible. And there's another vessel that we found, a spouted jar. And there's the drawing. A couple of oil lamps, whole oil lamps that we found. Early Roman, the upper tell. And then down in the G area, we found this beautiful Byzantine oil lamp, a slipper oil lamp with the cross on it. And our crew are digging up at the corner, in the right corner there, that bath complex that we opened up. And there it is there after we cleaned it all up. And you can see the benches and steps going down to it. Here's a close-up of it. And here I am sitting in it before I had my beard in those early days. We put a lot of miles on in those years.
Yes, we did.
Sure did.
And a few of the plates. I've got 65 plates in this preliminary report. We've published everything that we have. And there's a Byzantine lantern. They would put oil lamp inside of it. And some of the pottery, we put a lot of the out of the site. This is just one season, 2014. A lot of diagnostics here. The little sherds, we don't do much with those. Here we have a trefoil juglet and biconal juglet and spouted juglet. Lots of examples of some pottery from the late Roman period. And then some of the storage jars, amphoras, and then we go all the way through to the late Roman period, Byzantine period, early Byzantine. I'm going to flip through here for the early Byzantine to one, a special one that I wanted to talk about just for a second. This one here is called a eulogia, and it's a late Byzantine oil lamp. The one on the top was found in Jerusalem. The one on the side here is one that we found two examples of those in 2008, and they have an inscription on it, and it reads, "Jesus' light shines for all." And so these are souvenirs collected up in Jerusalem. They bring them down, and doing my research, I discovered they want to throw them into the bath for good luck, like we would throw a coin into a fountain. And so these become good luck souvenirs bought in Jerusalem. This puts us on the Roman road from Jerusalem all the way down to Livius, and then all the way up the hill to Eusebius or Heshbon. So this was a pretty pretty special find for us. It puts us on the Roman road.
And that was, you actually have two pieces of that part of that lamp, don't you? Twice.
Yeah, we do. There they are there.
Yeah, there's those two pieces on the left there.
And the flip side of the RG30 one actually has a fingerprint on it, you can see. The guy that made it left his mark with his fingerprint, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's on the far left there.
Far left, yes.
So, David, also there was an inscription in the bathhouse.
Yes, there was.
And that was quite a surprise to us.
Yes. We have an Islamic inscription. We found some Islamic pottery with inscriptions on it by the name of Allah. But my foot is standing on the stones there that have the inscription on the side of it, Umayyad period. We found some Umayyad pottery, so we know that it was in existence all the way through to the, 6th or 7th, 8th, to 11th century AD from the pottery. We believe it was wiped out by the earthquake in 750 something, I think. But the inscription says, by the name of Allah and by his prophet Muhammad. And this is on an inside wall. This is an inside wall of the bath complex. So it was being used for a very long time. There's some arches. We've got some rosettes on some of the architectural pieces that we've uncovered. But a lot more work needs to be done. But we've run out of steam, I'm afraid, on my end of things. We're getting too old to dig anymore.
Well, and right now we've run out of opportunity and time in Jordan.
Yes. Yeah. So it. Things have changed a lot. But the earthquake was 8749. We believe that that's when it was destroyed and probably went out of business because we didn't find any pottery later than that. So that's kind of what we put our energies into for eight seasons. And I worked with 10 for 10 seasons with you folks. I worked in a couple of other areas, but this was a real privilege to be able to excavate here and discover this. Pretty exciting for me as an archaeologist and a researcher and being able to do, be a detective and track down everything.
David, one final question. I know we got to cut out here pretty quick, but was Jesus ever here?
Well, we can't say for sure, but there's no doubt in my mind that he knew where it was. And that it was there and likely did because he'd have to cross over, use that Roman road as he went into Perea. And John the Baptist was baptizing just down the road from us at Bethany beyond the Jordan. And so we know that he was there. We know that Livius was the capital or our administrative center for Herod Antipas. And Herod wanted to meet Jesus and he doesn't meet Jesus up in Galilee where Jesus is because he's down here where we're at. He has to go up to over to Jerusalem to finally meet Jesus. And Jesus calls him a fox, which is not a complimentary name to be calling him. But John the Baptist, he's captured by Herod Antipas. I think he was probably living at this spot at the time. And he takes him down to Machaerus, according to the writings of Josephus, and that's where he's imprisoned and put to death. So all of the things with John the Baptist and Jesus take place around our site in Jerusalem and Machaerus. So I think that Jesus probably crossed over here at some point to go up to the Decapolis where he was ministering.
David, kind of right in the middle of the Holy Land, aren't we? Pretty cool stuff at Tell El-Hammam.
Yeah, everything seems to be happening around the spot.
Yep, it sure does.
Elijah and Moses and Jesus and John the Baptist.
There's a hot spot and a crossroads for just about everybody in the Bible. In fact, we've often thought about how many people hung out at Tell El-Hammam from the Bible. Well, and we discovered that it was easier to find people who may not have, because almost everybody who's notable in the Bible hung out at some point in their life in and around Tell El-Hammam.
That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. So it's been a great privilege to be able to uncover some of the biblical history and kind of put some of the pieces together that were missing and help put the puzzle together.
Yep.
Well, we certainly appreciate your work over the years with us, David, and it's eye-opening and it's insightful, and we really appreciate your contribution to the project.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the opportunity. And as I've always said, every level of the strata is important. Wherever we're digging, it seems to tell a story.
Absolutely.
So, David, real quickly as we close, just say your email, your website address, if anybody want to read some more about what's all you've done and are doing. So give us that.
Okay. And maybe Daniel can put it up on the screen for everyone. It's Simeon blogspot.com, Smyrna, Smyrnaean. I did my PhD work on Smyrna. That's why I called it that. Looking back, I would probably change it, but SmyrnaeanBlogspot.com, and you go to the front page. If you just click on that, all my books are listed there, all 30, and then there are links to each of the areas, and you can search the blog for articles, and academia.edu has all of my technical papers, and they're all free of charge that I've written over the years.
A careful scholar who loves the Lord, and a good friend.
Yes.
We're really glad to have you with us, buddy.
Great to be with you, Gary and Steve.
Thank you. And
thank
now
you, David.
It's probably almost 11:30 p.m. in Madeira. So we'll let you go home, or you're at home, go to bed, and we'll sign off at this end. Thanks for joining us today, this weekend, and over the years at Tel El Hammam and at Shiloh.
Great to be with you. God bless, guys.
Blessings, brother.
Thank you, David. God bless you.
Well, folks, we're going to be finishing up here now. And this ends this episode of Troweling Down. But there's a whole lot more to trowel down. We got a whole lot more to see and do and talk about. See you next month.